bathroom, and at this point in time, I would listen to it.
You're talking about the Johnny Knoxville movie? I'm kidding. Yeah, no, it's a great website, yeah. Bill Simmons' site.
So, because I got sucked into a couple things we were talking about yesterday, I may have listened to a solid 45-minute podcast on The Bachelor.
You don't even watch the show.
What's wrong with me? Wait, so Joel, I need professional help.
You spent 45 minutes. I think.
I did do 1.5 speed. I did 1.5 speed.
There you go. Combining the amount of time you listened to a podcast and read blogs, Reality Steve, whatever, that's probably as much time as the actual show takes to just watch.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so now I'm really having a problem. Like,
that's fair to say.
It's just, and I'm like, I'm kind of getting invested at this point.
Are you pulling for Hannah Ann to win?
Absolutely. Yeah, I love her. She's super cute. Yeah. I didn't realize now there is a huge disconnect in people that casually watch sports and people that know sports. Because Juliet, who hosts The Bachelor Party, which is her podcast, she knows the peripheral about sports. You know, she'll do some stuff with Bill every once in a while. She'll catch up basketball references. But at one point in time, they called Madison Pruitt a world-class athlete, which I'm not even sure that she started or how significant of playing time she got while she was at Auburn.
I'm confident that she's not world-class.
Yeah.
Skilled,
guys,
but...
You might want to pump the brakes there. Yeah.
I mean, I'm somewhat skilled. I'm nowhere near the world-class conversation.
Yeah, when I think of world-class athlete, I think Usain Bolt off the top of my head.
Being able to play around the world is not quite being world-class, right?
Well, but yeah, I'm all in. I'm getting excited for Hannah Ann, and I like that her, allegedly, because I still haven't watched it with my own eyes, but everything I'm hearing, her parents were just like, yeah, we don't know if we want you to marry our daughter. We're not sold on you, windmill.
So you're giving a recap of what you heard about the show, not the show that you watched. That's where we are, 2020, millennials, and beyond. Far more impressive than what Heather just displayed in the last 2 to 3 minutes of the show would be what Trey Smith had to say after he was awarded the Jason Witten Collegiate Man of the Year Award. I would say incredibly deserving of the honor. You, of course, have the Tennessee connection there with the Jason Witten's name on it and him presenting the award. Mm-hmm. And then Trey accepting. He was emotional, composed himself for a moment before giving what I thought was just a terrific speech. This is the speech from Trey Smith.
First and foremost, I want to give God the ultimate praise and glory. Without him, I wouldn't be here. I want to thank my family. I want to thank my friends. I want to thank the University of Tennessee Medical, academic, and obviously coaching staff for being here with me tonight. The whole time I was flying over here, and as soon as I woke up this morning, it's just one moment last year just kept bringing me back, you know. I was with my family, and I just visited doctors, and they're like, you know, man, hang it up, man. Like, you're done playing football. This is it. You know, something you dreamed about as a kid, a promise you made to your mom on her deathbed, hearing that it's done, you know, it's devastating. But, you know, we got our University of Tennessee football banquet, and when it was said and done, Coach Pruitt wanted to talk to my dad and my sister and I. We wanted to have a meeting, just see where we stood. And I remember sitting on his couch crying, you know. You know, we were talking about everything that was going to go down. And I just kept thinking about this moment. I'm like, man, it's not over yet. You know, God put a vision inside of me that night. And that whole week saying, you know what, man, I don't care what it says, you know, I have more glory, I have more honor for you. See, God had a bigger purpose for me. I told Coach Pruitt, I looked him in his eye, I go, you know what, I don't know why I feel this way. I don't know why what's telling me to do this, but I know I'm going to play next year. I know I'm going to play well. I know it's going to happen. You know, Coach Pruitt supported me every step of the way. He told me, you know, man, don't change anything. Just keep trying. Act like your season's coming up. Just keep going, keep going. For about 5 months, man, I was in the weight room, busting my butt every day, not knowing if it was going to pay off. When my time came, man, I was ready to go. I was ready to go this season. And I'm so thankful to be up here with y'all. But, you know, it's not about me. It's about all the people involved in my life. It's about all the people, all of you guys here, who we all can impact. We have to impact people while we have this time on earth. That's what it's really about. That's what's most important. As I write this next chapter in my journey, I have a lot of work to do. I thank you all for allowing me to see this award. God bless you all.
How impressive was that, Trey Smith?
He just gives me goosebumps. Whenever he wants to start his offensive lineman camp in Knoxville after his post-playing career and post-NFL career, whenever it is, I'm signing the boys up. I would love to have my boys be like Trey Smith. Somebody that is, you know, talented, so humble, works so hard, and just so mature. I mean, wise beyond his years. I can't imagine the devastation that he must have felt. And you hear it in his voice as he's speaking when he was given the news about his diagnosis. I just cannot imagine him and the feelings that he must have had to sift through. And the fact that he just never gave up, the fact that he just poured more of himself, not only into the game of football, but into this community. That's nothing short of incredible. It is just mind blowing that we are talking about somebody that is this impactful in the game of football and in society at the University of Tennessee. I mean, that's something that doesn't come around every year, and he is just so valuable in that regard.
You can hear Trey there, and you can tell how much the game of football means to him. I hope he has a long career. I hope he makes a ton of money playing football in the NFL. But you've also probably heard people talk about Trey Smith and say, even if he's not able to continue playing football, even if he's not able to have a pro career, last offseason when we didn't know if he would be able to come back for his junior year at Tennessee, when that was very much up in the air, as you heard him talking about there, you've probably heard a lot of people say, with or without football on the field, Trey is going to be incredibly successful. And listening to him right there helps explain why. Because when he arrived as a freshman, he walked in as a guy that just appeared really comfortable in whatever room he walked into. And then you hear about and you see the adversity he's had to face in his personal life, on the field, off the field, all of that combined, and see how he's handled it. It's just incredibly impressive.
Yeah. And I'm just so excited. I'm kind of torn because I wish his NFL career was, you know, starting this year so we could cheer him on and he could be living out his dream. He's going to delay that, you know, one more year. But the fact that you get a guy like that back, the fact that that whole team loves Trey and listens to every word he says, that kind of leadership is priceless at this point in time when this is a team that's still going to need it, because you're still going to be playing a lot of young guys. You're going to be playing some new guys. I mean, he is going to be the driving force in that locker room and on that field. And to listen to him talk, he's just so impressive. That's so impressive.
Yeah, all the off-field talk and the discussion of how impressive he is just as a person, a human being. A darn good football player. Maybe the best offensive lineman in the SEC or the country. He's at least in that conversation for sure. Yep. In terms of his talent and his ability. And by the way, he gets to go through an offseason where he can actually prepare on the field, it would look like. Remember, last couple of offseasons, he's not able to go through everything in offseason training and practice or even fall camp.
Yep.
Before the start of the season.
Yeah,
or during the season.
He had to face a lot of limitations. You're absolutely right. And the fact that he was able to battle the SEC defensive linemen that he's going up against every single week, who's are no slouches, that's for sure. And he was doing it with limited preparation, whether it's on the lifting side or just, you know, getting in there and doing your drills, doing your work and honing your craft. He was just so limited. And for him to hold his own, that's incredible. And the fact that you're right, it looks like he will be more clear this year than he has been over the last couple of seasons. And so I think the sky's the limit for him. And if you're not rooting for Trey Smith, I don't care if you're an Alabama fan, if you're a Florida fan, if you're not rooting for a guy like that, then we got bigger problems.
Well, I've no doubt that he has the respect of a lot of people, Tennessee fans and otherwise. And you didn't need Heather or me to tell you how impressive he was. Hearing Trey Smith himself reminds you probably of how impressive he is. We will come back here on Sports 180. We appreciate you being with us this afternoon. John Wilkerson's going to stop by the studio at 1:30. He'll be with us for the second half of this hour. Coming up, Rick Barnes talks about something that we've been talking about, I think, most of the season, the future of Tennessee basketball. He talked about it a little bit last night. You'll hear him next on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180, thanks for being with us. Download the WNML app and you can listen on the go. You can listen live. You can listen on demand in the podcast section. We will talk to John Wilkerson coming up from 1:30 until 2 o'clock here on Sports 180. We're with you, of course, until 3 when Sports Talk will take over.
One thing I neglected to mention in our just glowing reviews of Trey Smith, I also want to give him props for his fashion choices. I am here for it. I love that's kind of like the Texas going out look is what he presented when he got that award. So nice pants, cowboy boots, a great blazer, a cowboy hat. I love it. Great look.
How do you think I would do with that look?
I think he would look nice.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely. And probably make you look taller. You know, those hats are tall.
All right. So that's where we are today. That's strike two, by the way. We've had balding strike jokes, one, we've had height jokes.
Strike one, I totally apologize for. Strike two, that smile.
I think the audience picked up. All right, Rick Barnes probably not going to apologize for any comments he made after the game last night. But, you know, something we talk about a lot is, okay, what's going on with the team? What will they get done by the end of the season? But also, the guys who will be coming in, players who will be coming back, the development of the players, all that conversation. Rick Barnes hit on it a little bit last night in his post-game press conferences. He was talking about challenging Eve Pons and John Fulkerson, two guys who have stepped into what should be leadership roles and should continue with that into the future. Rick Barnes talked about challenging those two guys specifically to do even more.
You know, I don't ever talk about next year and all that, but we realize these guys are going to be the guys we've got to develop over the next couple years. And they have developed. They have learned that and I say this, and I'm not sure I'm right. I don't know yet if they truly understand when you are being game planned for every single night, how hard it is to be a good player every single night. And that's something that both of those guys are learning. Do they have it right now? I don't think totally. And now they do a lot of things that are really good, but at this time of year, this is when those guys have got to be elite for us. And we need, again, I can understand some of the things that Santi and Josiah, the freshman young guys, do, even Olivier and Uroš. But those two guys have played enough, been in enough big games, that and we're going to put it in there. And you know what? Everybody knows we are. I mean, there's no secrets this time of year. And as we get it there, we're counting on those guys. They're not going to make them all, but they got to make the easy ones. And we started the game with about as easy a shot as you could get, and we couldn't make it. And I think when you start missing them right there, I think it can mess with your head if you're not mentally tough enough to handle it.
So the growing process, something even some of the older guys are still going through.
One thing I would point out to people is Rick Barnes is not like us in the fact that I do not believe he has unrealistic expectations for guys like Eve Pons and John Fulkerson. I think he sees some good things in them. He knows that they have to get better, but he sees their potential. He sees what they can become, and that's why he's so hard on them. He's not just hard on them because he's angry or anything like that. I truly believe he knows what their real ability is, and that's why his expectations for those guys are high.
Oh, I think Rick's expectations for some of Tennessee players, those two especially Eve Pons and John Fulkerson, have been higher than the fan base's expectations. The expectations, I think, from the fan base were really high for guys like Lamonte and Jordan coming back mm-hmm. for their senior years. And Lamonte's obviously not playing with the team anymore. And then Josiah Jordan James, a five-star freshman coming in. And not that Rick didn't expect some things out of those guys as well, but when you talk about the guys that fill out the roster, you know, a lot of the preseason conversation is, in spite of what Tennessee has in the post, meaning Fulkerson and Pons in a lot of ways, Tennessee was going to have success because of the backcourt. And the conversation has flipped. Do they have enough in the backcourt has actually been a big question because of injuries and a lot of that. But Fulkerson's a guy that Rick Barnes is saying, hey, he can be as good as anybody from that class a few years ago, a class that had Grant Williams. And Fulkerson, remember, had to deal with that very serious injury.
Yes.
And Pons was a guy where it was difficult to tell because he was so raw as a basketball player. And credit to the staff, credit to him and Fulkerson, too, with those both of those guys being included. The work that they've put in to become really good players. But to your point, Rick Barnes has thought more highly of what they can become as players than I would say most fans and media, myself included.
And I think that's why he gets angry, not because they're tied with Vanderbilt at the half. John Fulkerson is making mental errors. When you're missing wide open layups, that is a mental lapse. You are not focused on the task at hand. And Rick, there is one thing that I think he does better than so many people. He doesn't do it often, but when he uses the media to motivate his team, when he uses public comments to motivate his team, I think they're always properly timed. I think they're very fair. I think some people think it comes across as harsh, but it works. Look at the transformation in John Fulkerson in the first half last night and the second half. He was having lapses in judgment. He wasn't focused. And Rick got upset about that. He motivated his player. And then he comes out and ends up being the player of the game after only having 1 point in the first half.
I would also say from last night, you probably didn't have to set too high of a bar of expectation to still be disappointed with the way that they played last night in the game.
It was brutal.
Yeah. Now, that's where guys who have dealt with hearing some of that criticism plenty of times from Rick Barnes in the past, Admiral Schofield, who was there at the game last night, and then Lamonte Turner talking to the players in the locker room. Listen to what Rick had to say about their message.
Well, I think the biggest thing, they said a couple of really good things where they were saying, hey, we were right where you guys are when we were sophomores, the exact same place, except we had Robert Hubbs, who had really been our security blanket that year, and we were right where we were, and then he got hurt, and, you know, his last five, six games, he couldn't play. He tried. He gave us everything he had. Well, we haven't had a security blanket since Lamonte went out. You know, he was our defensive guy. He was a guy that in competitive situations, like, you know, you knew you had a guy that was going to make something happen and had been through it. And they talked about it. Okay. We were there, and then we had to figure out how to break through. And that's where this team is right now. And how do you break through? You don't break through by playing well when things are going well. You break through by playing every possession like every possession matters. And again, you don't have to be perfect. You don't. But you cannot be sloppy and walk around like, you know, it's not that big a deal. You can't turn the ball over the way we turn it over. You can't do that. You can't give 10, like we had 10 turnovers against South Carolina, and that's to take nothing away from them. That had nothing to do with anything other than us being careless with the ball. And then tonight at the end, you know, we thought the game was over like a bunch of immature guys and got sloppy, and the next thing you know, you're in a battle.
Rick Barnes last night after the game against Vanderbilt, and Tennessee did get out of there with the win. If Tennessee had lost that game, whoo, think how Rick would have reacted to that one. Probably about the same, actually, but still.
And, hey, I like how he gave props to Jerry Stackhouse and how that Vanderbilt team, they could have quit. When Tennessee went on that run and John Fulkerson had the back-to-back possessions where he's blocking Vanderbilt and then he's knocking down a shot and then going back on the defensive end and blocking another shot. I mean, Vanderbilt could have folded the tents. They didn't, and they kept the pressure on Tennessee. So you give them a lot of credit, which Rick Barnes did multiple times last night. And I still believe that Jerry Stackhouse is going to – I don't know what heights Vanderbilt's going to be able to reach, but he is turning – the page on just this awful era that they've been in since Stallings was basically relieved of his duties.
Yeah. Stack was very complimentary of John Fulkerson after the game, said he's playing at an all SEC level. And recently, how could you argue that one?
Wow. That is awesome. So, man, if you would have told me at the beginning of the season, we could be talking about John Fulkerson, an all SEC basketball player, I might have snickered. I wouldn't have laughed, but I might have been like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll see if that's the case. And that's where we find ourselves right now. He's definitely in the conversation.
One other note, Stackhouse has immediately entered the conversation for best dressed coaches in college basketball.
Man.
The belt holder would be Jay Wright, I believe, at Villanova. I think I'm right on that he would be the top
choice. You think
he's
the best? Yeah, but he's got great suits.
Stack's known for his suits. Also, how much he takes care of them, because one of my favorite stories of him just beating up NBA players was one time after a game, he put his jumpsuit on after the game to go kick somebody's butt, then came back to the locker room and changed into his suit because he didn't want to get it dirty.
Yeah, you can't get blood on something, you know? The suits are expensive.
Jerry Stackhouse, legend in the NBA. He was an all-star twice, and I couldn't care less about that. We'll come back. John Wilkerson coming up next, another half hour in hour number two. We'll talk a lot. Tennessee basketball, football, this Houston Astros mess. LeBron weighing in, John Wilkerson on it next with 90 minutes to go until Sports Talk begins on FM 99.1, the sports animal. Back on Sports 180. Name that artist, John Wilkerson.
It would be The Boss.
There you go.
Not a boss.
The Boss.
The Boss. And I'll say this. Been listening to his Broadway CD. And my goodness. That all of a sudden becomes a huge regret that I never had made the point to go up and see him, because it is fantastic. If you're a fan, and my guess is, even if you're not a fan, if you were to hear the stories behind the songs, you're like, gosh, how could I not like or appreciate that?
Well, actually, yeah, hearing stories about Bruce Springsteen has given me a greater appreciation for his music, which I already like. But then when you hear about the process and almost the insanity that goes into him creating these albums that end up becoming classics, how could you not at least respect or have a greater appreciation for the music?
It's been laugh out loud funny to actual emotion that is generated. So it's actually been an incredible listen. I'm not to the end of it, and it's almost like a good book. You don't want to get to the last song. You don't want to get to the last page because you've enjoyed the experience that much. But Springsteen on Broadway, so worth it.
And you can easily go to YouTube and watch him get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then him induct the, what is it, E Street Band?
Yes.
Into the Hall. I always say E or EZ, the E Street Band into the Hall of Fame, and the stories that they tell, that he is just so awesome. And Glenn is always upset because he took him for granted growing up in New Jersey, because, you know, you couldn't get away from Bruce Springsteen. He was like, oh, I don't like Bruce Springsteen. And then when he was like out of his 20s and in Knoxville, he was like, I love Bruce Springsteen. So he's like, why did I take it for granted all those years?
He was talking about when he was getting his start, that, you know, doing so many different kinds of events. And he says all up and down the Jersey Shore. And he said, and let's be honest here. It's not like this is where people were going. You know, all this Jersey Shore, Jersey, I invented that.
So he was the originator of Jim Tan Laundry.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
No doubt about it. John Wilkerson here until 2 o'clock with us on Sports 180. We've talked about Rick Barnes, pretty fired up last night. On the post game, you're part of the Vol Network broadcast. Bob and Bert were bringing up some of the positives because Tennessee did get a win. And before that final minute, which wasn't good.
No.
Tennessee did extend to a double-digit lead, and I thought they could win by 12, 15 points here. They didn't, but Rick wasn't having much positive time. I mean, he would acknowledge some of the good things, but he didn't want to talk about that.
No, and as you guys have discussed, and the language is very pointed in terms of, we had a bunch of guys that were doing everything but acting like the mature ball players they should be, and just acting like the game was over and the game was won, and you just had mindless decisions in terms of not pulling the ball back out, just kind of letting somebody else go get a rebound. It is amazing how quickly you can see a lead evaporate, because it was earlier this year when LSU and Florida played, and the Gators wound up missing a last-second inbound that would have tied the game, but they were down like 11 with 1:19 to go, and they got it down to 1.
Yeah.
So it is amazing how quickly a team can score when the other side leaves the door open, and Tennessee did that. And thankfully, for Tennessee's perspective, Jordan Bowden stuck those two free throws to make it a 4-point game late.
Rick, last night and previous during this season, has criticized his team's basketball IQ, especially when it's sort of crunch time. Is that fair criticism?
I think so. And also, I think you can see what is, I'm sure, season's worth frustrations of, here's the game plan. When you're in this position, we want you to do this. If you're going against this particular set, we want you to do this. And having been privy to some of the film study and the game planning and the different things that they do, it is amazing to the degree which they tell you, look, here's their point guard. He wants to go to his left. You make sure that he can't go to his left, and he is going to be a much weaker offensive contributor because he just struggles to go to his right. They show you the very specific things that they want you to do. It is so well planned out. It is so well done by the assistants. And when they don't do it, you can say, we just told you, make him go to his right. Because if he goes to his left, he's going to score, because that's where he torched the team they just played, and they show the video. And so it really is something. And I also think it comes down to also what's been missing, I think, from this team that wasn't last year, and that is you don't have the strong personality that can keep guys accountable. And I don't think anybody's ever going to bristle when the guy who says, we need you to play better, is also pointing the finger at himself. And that's not to say nobody won't point the finger at themselves. You just don't see that strong of a voice, that strong of a personality in terms of the cast that right now makes up Tennessee basketball.
Yeah, Lamonte was the guy returning that Rick Barnes was going to count on in that role.
Yeah, and unfortunately, and he's been around the team, to his credit,
right,
to have been dealt the hand that he was, and it was something to see just the way his career at Tennessee ended, because can't imagine the pain that he went through, even though it wasn't his shooting shoulder, so to speak, just to know that that's what you're dealing with, to look at the effort that he put in to working it out, to going and traveling to see specialists as to what could possibly improve before having part of a rib removed to see if they can't get on top of the thoracic outlet syndrome, which, by the way, was the same syndrome that brought an end to Luke Hochaver's pitching career. I mean,
I didn't realize that.
It's the same deal. So it really is serious. It is painful, and it is something that will change your life one way or another. And so hated that it went that way. And he's been around the program, which I'm sure has to be frustrating for him, because he knows he could help out in situations when it hasn't gone well. But it's just you can have a voice. And last night he and Schofield spoke to the team after the game was over. But I just know that it's not the same impact when it's somebody that you're out on the floor with.
Right. They can also literally do what he's saying. Take the ball, go make a play for you, as Lamonte would have also been tasked with, locking down a guy in the perimeter. Just obvious things that come with him out there on the floor versus him not.
Yeah, and
plus minutes. I mean, Vescovi is a guy that Rick Barnes is talking about. He has to be fatigued at times. He's playing serious minutes when he just joined the team in the middle of the season. And you join the team where it's not early, where you're playing every 7 days. You're playing every 2 to 3 days, mm-hmm, 3 to 4 days, and against the higher level competition.
Yeah, and his Tennessee career, his time in Knoxville is 8 weeks. His Tennessee career is 7 weeks. That's it. And we're talking about still a young 18-year-old. So I just really am impressed with how hard that he's worked. And I do think that there are things that his game will grow out of, and that is that frustrating notion of, I'm going to go airborne, not really sure where I'm going to pass it,
yeah,
don't see exactly who I'm going to pass it to, and you wind up with an easy turnover.
Yeah.
But I just think that where would Tennessee be? And obviously Tennessee's not in any kind of lockdown position for a postseason berth, let alone the NCAA tournament or the NIT.
Right.
But where would they be if Vescovi hadn't been able to join the team?
Oh, you would get laughed at if you were talking about any sort of postseason talk with without him.
They'd be getting ready for a Wednesday game in the SEC tournament.
Yeah. They would be. And guess
probably
is...
a one-night booking hotel. Yeah,
they would be right there probably keeping company with Georgia and Vanderbilt.
Man, Georgia season.
It's just weird.
That's
how did they beat Tennessee and beat them so handily?
Yeah, that was a whipping.
Wild.
And have potentially the top pick in the draft.
That's right.
That's playing for you right now in Edwards. My guess is year three for Tom Crean's probably
pressure.
Going to be, hey, you want to do something?
Yeah. We spend a lot of time talking about what the football job is. The Georgia job, what it seems like it should be, nobody can get there. Mark Fox, he did a nice job, but getting Georgia to what you would think you could do with the talent that's still around, I mean, it's not like Crean wasn't able to bring in players in this class.
Right.
And still, it doesn't work out.
It, for whatever reason, the sum continually does not equal its parts.
Yeah.
It falls less. Obviously, you want the team that exceeds the sum of its parts, and that's what really good teams do. But for whatever reason, because you could take the Georgia players individually and you could look at guys that would immediately contribute if they wound up being lifted from Athens into your program. But boy, it just hasn't come together.
John Wilkerson with us for another segment. John, have you heard about this whole Astros Major League Baseball thing?
I've heard a little bit of something, like there was a ruffled feather here or there.
Yeah, some metal was included. We'll brief you on it coming up during the break, and then we'll get some thoughts from John Wilkerson next on Sports 180 here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180, thanks for being with us today. One quick note, this is really cool. Saw a photo from Roush Fenway earlier today with Ryan Newman with his daughters. They just posted an update. He has been treated and released.
Oh, wow. How about that? Is that not incredible?
Yeah, from the Halifax Medical Center. So Ryan Newman out of the hospital. Very cool. Less than 48 hours after a horrible crash at the end of the Daytona 500.
Yeah, and boy, what an instance that was, just to see the reaction and all that was posted on social media while folks were waiting for some kind of word. And obviously, one of the worst things to have, if there's a void to fill, you rarely get what's appropriate at the time. And just to see so many people do this, say that, search this. Oof. But unbelievable to see the footage, and then also that he is out of the hospital 48 hours later.
Yeah, incredible. So Roush Fenway Racing with the announcement just a moment ago. Ryan Newman treated and released from the hospital following his crash just 2 days ago at the Daytona 500. A story that has, of course, it's continued on, grown, it seems like, in some ways. John, the Houston Astros, Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, how he's handled all of this, and all of the players around Major League Baseball who seem to be speaking out, some who are often willing to talk, others who are more reserved, coming up with criticism. LeBron weighing in yesterday on Twitter.
And I was talking with Heather during the break and then put out on Sports Talk yesterday, it's like, who haven't we heard from now? Because it's been like Wrigley Field bringing that new celebrity to sing the seventh inning stretch.
Yeah, it is.
Take me out to the ballgame. Who's going to talk today? Oh, it's Aaron Judge. Oh, look, it's Mike Trout. Oh, Hank Aaron. My goodness. So it's like, who hasn't to this point? Cody Bellinger, boy.
Yeah.
He brought some flame, and then some folks pointed out, what did you hit in that 17 World Series? Oh.
Well, if he'd had some signals.
That's right.
Somebody bang on the trash can for him.
But I just think that it really has been something to see, and I don't think there's any question that nerves are very raw in regards to this. So I just wonder what it would be like, because you've got a pretty tight core group that's making up the Astros now, but you know that down the road, and perhaps even later this year, there could be cuts made after spring training where somebody lands in another locker room. What is that reception going to be?
Yeah.
Even if it is a very talented player who they just want to go in a different direction, or if there's a trade, I just wonder what it's going to be like for these Astros as they finish their respective careers, because I don't think there's any question. They are one of the most talented teams in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that's part of the shame of they could have won the title without this, and yes, they are really good, and they've kind of taken away their own credit that they had.
Well, and just look at, you go back to 17 and the ALCS, just look how strong their pitching was.
Yeah.
I mean, they handcuffed the Yankees. Sure, I'm not downplaying the cheating at all. I'm just saying, look at how well they pitched. The Yankees couldn't get the bats going.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it went seven games this past season, but they were really, they penned them up is what they did. So I just think that it is such a shame, but also, what will it be for these players? Because we've already seen a couple from 2017 that are elsewhere with Charlie Morton and one or two others. And yeah, they say Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah,
should have done more. Sorry for my part in it, if they had a part, or Justin Verlander. And he was such a late arrival. I hate that he feels he has to apologize, because he drops in September.
Yeah, yeah. Just in the playoff, for the playoff push.
Yeah, so it
really
paid
off.
It did, and I thought he was a fantastic leader and such a great addition, and he's been such a big part of what the Astros have done the right way.
Also, I think Rob Manfred is just really hoping that Tom Brady will make some sort of announcement in the next week, because they can't get out from under it. He cannot evade this, because there's nothing else going on. I mean, everything is going to overshadow, or nothing will overshadow his comments, the Astros' comments, and the fact that you're just at the beginning of spring training and everybody wants to talk about it.
Oh yeah, the piece of metal deal. My goodness. Okay, it's literally what every franchise is chasing in your sport. Yeah, it's a piece of metal.
Yeah, it's the ultimate goal that everybody dreams of reaching.
Correct.
And I think his point, not to speak for him, but his point was, yeah, I could take away the trophy, the piece of metal. You're still going to know who won the World Series. We can't retroactively go back and name another champion. How dumb would that be? So I get that it was sort of silly to consider taking away the trophy, but the way he said it was just very wrong.
And he did offer this apology yesterday, which was, I would say, needed after the players responded to that as well. John Lester not happy with how that was talked about it. But this was Rob Manfred yesterday offering up the apology.
You know, I had a long day on Sunday. I think I did 45 minutes on camera, and then I did a press conference. I have to say I made one mistake, at least, during that long day. And that was in an effort to make a rhetorical point. I referred to the World Series trophy in a disrespectful way. And I want to apologize for that. There's no excuse for it. I made a mistake. I was trying to make a point, but I should have made it in a more effective way. And again, I want to apologize for it. I will say this, you know, I've awarded 5 World Series trophies. There is no greater pleasure in this job than awarding that trophy. I understand what it means. And again, it was a mistake to say what I said.
Rob Manfred yesterday with the apology.
Yeah. But Seelig's going, not so easy to sit in the seat, is it?
Right.
No kidding.
It is not an easy position. You're well compensated to do that. Still, you've got to perform better than he has in this situation.
Yeah, this screams of, hey, Goodell, hold my beer.
Yeah. John, a couple minutes before this segment ends, Tennessee baseball, you're getting ready for a trip. Normally, you join us for extended time on Thursdays, but joined us today because you're getting ready to take off tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity. Tennessee 4-0 after the win yesterday against Charlotte, going to Round Rock, Texas for the inaugural Round Rock Classic, it's Texas Tech's tournament. They'll take on what is one of the teams that it's ranked number one in the polls right now. That'll be Friday. Then they'll meet up with Houston on Saturday, and then they'll go up against current top 25 team Stanford on Sunday. So this will be a measuring stick. Tennessee has picked as high as it's been picked in the Eastern Division at 4th, but for some of those that have already thrown out their initial projection for the field of 64, Tennessee didn't make it for D1 baseball. I kind of think they'll be there. If they finish 4th in the East, I think they'll be in the NCAA tournament for a second straight year. But, again, this is where you get to find out about your ball club. They've threw up a bunch of runs against Western Illinois and they've hit 2 home runs in all 4 games. We'll see if the bats travel, but it's going to be a lot of fun to watch them go up against these teams.
Well, something similar to what Heather said, I think, earlier in the hour about Rick Barnes and the expectations he has for his players and the team, often higher than maybe what we set for, I'd say for sure this year. Probably the same with Tony Vitello. He has high expectations for what the Tennessee baseball team is going to do.
Yeah, he talked about regionals for year one.
Yeah.
They made it year two. And he, from the moment their season ended, he in Chapel Hill, he said, don't look back. Build on it. Set your bar higher. And everything that he says, it's such a different feel to the team because they've seen what they can accomplish, and now they know what it takes to get there and perhaps further. So I just really think it's very exciting. Their starting pitching has been awfully strong. And again, we'll see how they measure up against one of the nation's top teams and as well as one of the most storied programs. Tennessee's played Stanford in the College World Series. That was back in 95, so that'll be fun to see them square off once again.
So if fans are looking for Tennessee baseball?
UTSports.com and the UT Game Day app.
John Wilkerson will be there with Tennessee baseball this weekend. One final note, you're a Cavs fan. Favorite highlight of the John Beilein era?
Well, that would be that early win against the Bulls. For that brief shining moment, they were ahead. At one point, they were .500.
I hope he gets a settlement. I hope he gets a huge, huge
it's
settlement.
It's a 5-year contract.
Yeah,
there's a lot of negotiating going on.
He gave up a great spot at Michigan to go to Cleveland.
Yeah, Sam pointing out he's going to make a beeline out of Cleveland, probably back to college. Get it?
I do. Because
no, is that fair though? Because I don't think it's an indictment on Beeline.
I don't think he's without fault for how it went, but there's no doubt the franchise has its
impairments.
Yeah. But I mean, because when he left Michigan, people were saying, you're going to Cleveland? That's where you're taking your shot? And in all fairness there, if he had gone to the Bulls, I think he may have made it a season.
Yes.
But probably wouldn't have worked out there either. But I don't think he went in there understanding what he was taking on in that job.
Well, and it's been discussed for years because Dan Gilbert and Tom Izzo are good friends.
Yeah.
They've been friends for a long time, and it was thought if Izzo was ever going to explore it, it would be with his pal, and he would leave Michigan State. Then they wind up getting the coach from Michigan, and it's like, really? It has not worked well in the past. There have been some coaches that have made the transition from college to the pros.
Yeah.
But normally it was with a roster that was NBA ready.
Yeah. Mm. Safe travels, John. We appreciate the time.
Sure do appreciate it.
We'll check in before Sports Talk at 3 o'clock as well. Another hour of Sports 180 to go on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.